It's my pleasure for today's topic to introduce our moderator, Jerry McLean. Jerry works and plays at the crossroads of creative communication and emerging technology. His career includes roles as writer and editor, multimedia producer, web developer, software consultant, and communication designer. His current work explores how society, organizations, and individuals shape and are shaped by the technology we choose to use every day. He launched the PERCC research project to focus on the development, adoption, and the use of pervasive computing and communication in everyday life. How appropriate for the topic. Welcome, Jerry, and thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Well, good morning. Welcome. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to join us here. We are going to have a really great session this afternoon. We are here to talk about how you can use blogs and podcasts and RSS feeds to better your business communications. Before we get started, let me just take a quick poll for myself and for our panelists. So how many of you are blogging right now? Okay. How many of you read blogs on a somewhat regular basis? Okay, great. So we've got what we believe is a really cool setup for you today. We're going to start with the basics. We're going to start with some introduction on the tools, the technologies that you can use, so you can get an understanding of what blogs are all about. It's not techno-speak. It's not geek-speak. It's stuff that's really accessible to all of us. We want to make sure that you're comfortable with it. So we're going to start out with the basics. And after that, we're going to have a conversation about what you can do with the basics. What does it really mean when you go back to your companies, to your everyday work environments, and try to make use of this sort of stuff? What are the trips and traps that you need to watch out for? What are the things that you can adopt as best practices? And that's where the second part, the conversation, is really going to focus. So let's begin with the basics. I want to introduce Michael Pritchard. As Gary mentioned, Michael is with WillowTree Interactive. Michael has put together a primer for you. Let me just give you a really quick background on Michael. Michael is the founder and president of WillowTree Interactive. It's a software company specializing in online data management products, and it's based in Charlottesville. He's been architecting and building enterprise-level software for over 8 years, and has worked with a wide variety of web technologies. Michael also works closely with companies like Macromedia, participating on many of their beta programs, as well as personally exploring new open source commercial initiatives developing on the intranet. So please welcome Michael, who will talk you through the basics of blogs, podcasting, and RSS.
Well, first of all, I'm going to attempt this over here, but I'm glad to see everybody here. It's really exciting to see there's so much interest in this technology, which I actually find very exciting myself. Well, first thing we need to ask is, what in the world is a blog? I mean, you hear the term all the time, but no, let's just talk about what it really is. Essentially, it's a sort of an online journal, per se. You can post your thoughts, people can actually comment on your thoughts, and there's a couple little tools that we need to talk about that really makes a blog, as opposed to just a straight, static, traditional website. Look at the anatomy of a blog. First, of course, is the post, date, and time. That's pretty obvious. The category. You basically can put one of your posts into many different categories, be it press releases, news, software, whatever category you want to put, you can actually file your little articles away. There's the title, which is another obvious one. The body, which is the actual content of your message. Now, this is sort of where we start getting into what a blog really is. And there's certain tools and aspects that are built into blogging software that actually help you get onto the blogosphere and actually become part of the community itself. One of them is a trackback. Basically, a trackback is a link that shows your blog that you're being linked somewhere else, on another blog in the blogosphere. So you start noticing an actual network, a community of bloggers getting together, spreading each other's message and word or whatever around in a tightly knit network. Of course, there's comments. People are allowed to leave comments, if you want, onto your blog. You may not like them all the time, but they're allowed to do it. You could also moderate, et cetera, et cetera. But the whole point is you're developing a communication, a conversation with your viewer, you know, be it your customer or anything else you want to use it for. A permalink is basically a URL, which is a little thing you put on top of a browser. And, you know, I hope I don't sound too general, but I kind of want to keep it at 100,000 foot view. But anyway, it's a permalink that basically allows you to go directly to that particular post. So you put that in the URL location thing on top of Explorer or Firefox and it takes you right there. Of course, the footer has a little more information about the date, time, author, category, and just stats, you know, as the number of comments and track backs that that particular article has had. Now, let's talk about why this is a little different than your traditional website. A traditional website, which I'm sure you all are aware, is usually a bunch of static HTML pages that are connected together with little links, anchors, that you have in between the different things. Well, that doesn't really have any type of interactivity with your users. They go there, it's the same thing. It's static. Nothing ever changes. There's nothing to bring them back, nothing to really keep them there. A blog, on the other hand, is dynamic. It's a living thing the way I see it. You know, you're always updating it. There's software that makes it really easy to do. People can interact. It's always changing, so there's always something new coming up that lets people, people want to come to it, obviously, for the topics that you're talking about. Here's some advantages. One, blogging software allows for the easy creation of these articles and these pages. It's usually a piece of software. It's a little form you fill out, you know, the title, the post, whatever you want. You hit submit, and bam, it's done. It's out in the blogosphere. Everybody can get to it. Everybody can comment to it and such. It allows for easy filtering. You know, it's from a database now that you're pulling this information. So you're able to write different search parameters, and you can search for certain things, author, date, whatever. It's easy to actually add and invite new authors. Again, it's a piece of software that does it all for you. It's so easy that even I can do it. And believe me, if I can do it, any one of you here can do it, because I'm nothing special. Before we get a little more about actual blogs and you know, RSS and all that, I want to talk about a little bit about the evolution of a blog. The real concept, in my opinion, is nothing new. It's an electronic community. And if you start looking back in history of when we started first having electronic communities, you look at stuff like the AP Wire, which essentially is a large chat room, in my opinion. People post the news, you're able to pull it, you know, you could syndicate it in newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. You also look at amateur or ham radios. You know, you get a receiver and transceiver, you're part of this community to actually talk about different topics. And I've seen ham radio reach across actually the other side of the, you know, literally around the world. It's pretty amazing stuff. 1990s, you know, all of us started learning about the internet a little more. We had technologies as stuff called Usenet, which is a tried and true service or server or network of information sharing. It's like an open forum. People go post their topics. You can reply. It's actually a really great technology. It's good for passing files around, et cetera, but it does lack a little bit of control. It's an open forum, so anybody can go in there and do what they want. You have email lists, which obviously probably most of you actually found out about this through a VPDC email list and whatnot. You have online journals, which is just static pages, and just typical corporate websites, which were, again, static pages. When you want it updated, you go in there manually and you add what's new, a press release. It wasn't really anything interactive or anything, you know, to really take it to the next level, I guess you could say. So naturally, people got tired of doing this on their own, so the blog kind of was invented, and these certain things, trackbacks, the permalinks, stuff like that, came about to help facilitate the actual blogging community. In 1997, the term weblog was coined, and blog was actually coined in 1999. Now, this is something that I got from actually technorati.com, which is something that you all need to start going to. It's what I call the authority on searching for blogs. I mean, you can find anything you want here. I find this actually really exciting and really interesting at the same time. You start noticing in March 2003, you know, the number of blogs is pretty close to zero. Then you notice this amazing growth. You know, July 2005, we're almost up to 14 million blogs, which are essentially 14 million new websites. And that's amazing growth to me, and it gets me pretty excited to know that this is actually really taken off. It's another interesting little graph. You know, as of July 2005, 80,000 blogs are created daily. So, I mean, just think about those numbers. That's just amazing. You know, new weblogs created every second. You know, 55% of new bloggers, you know, are still posting 3 months later, which kind of shows you that it's sort of lasting. It's not just a one-time thing. And then 13% of all blogs are updated weekly or more. So 13% of 14 million is a big number of people actually doing this. So I don't know. I don't think it's a fad. I think there's something that we all should be paying attention to, and it's something that's very important in terms of using it for our own businesses and, you know, and other things, lifestyle, whatever you want to do. Of course, being that there's 14 million blogs created, you know, so many blogs slow at a time, how can we be expected to go to all these different websites every day, you know, 10, 20, 30, and see what's changed, if anything's changed? You know, well, the answer is you cannot do that. Not in a million years are you going to do that. So the smart people on the internet developed something very interesting to help bring it all together for you. RSS, I want you to meet the audience. Audience, meet RSS. Okay, RSS, there's a couple of different definitions, but I like to go with really simple syndication. It's an easy way, which basically equals an easy way to keep up and spread, I say the word, but you know, it's an easy way for you to go out, you know, for you to find these things, to come to you and to know what's going on. You know, that's really neat, but you know, how does it really work? I'm going to warn you right now, I am an IT guy at heart, and I'm a little geeky, so I sometimes geek out, and I know we said we weren't going to really get geeky, but this will be the only time I'm going to do it, and I promise it'll be painless, but I think it's very important when you see this, you get an idea of how it works. Okay, this is an RSS packet, okay? Basically, what an RSS packet is a defined XML formatted file or just piece of information. And basically, XML is I like to say it's data that defines itself, right? So if you notice here, you have title, Charlottesville blogs, the link to it, the language, description, the different items, which are the different articles coming up. This is used by software that we call aggregators to actually pull feeds, RSS feeds, from different sites to a single location. So you go to one place, be it your Outlook, be it your website, be it wherever you want to have the aggregator, to actually see people posting new information. So you're not traveling to 10, 20, 30 websites. You have one place that you want that you can actually pull this new information coming out. Now, there's a really great aggregator here in Charlottesville, and that's what Waldo does, which is Sevo Blogs. It's essentially all the known blogs in Charlottesville, and I think it's up to 89, you said? 89 Charlottesville blogs. So if you have a blog, you need to let him know. It needs to be on that list. But it's a great place to actually look for information. RSS available for a little aggregator. It's available for MS Outlook, for Thunderbird, pretty much whatever you want. It's built into many web browsers, you know, including Safari, including Firefox. Internet Explorer is actually coming out with it, which is usually a good sign when Microsoft decides to actually move to something new. It's usually tried and true, and I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. It's easy to display and combine RSS feeds and share them with your customers or whoever else you want to share them with. This is a really interesting concept for me, is that you're able to take these different pieces of information and combine them. I'm trying to stress the community part of sharing information with people and the ability to actually get stuff out a lot quicker than you could with traditional email lists, traditional websites. For example, we had an article in the Daily Progress. Thanks, that was awesome. But basically, I posted it on our blog, on the Willow Tree blog, and next thing you know, it's on three other websites, you know, because of RSS. Websites that I would never have known, never talked to, and that, to me, that's a powerful medium to get your message out. Obviously, people, you have to opt in to an RSS feed. It just doesn't get spammed to you. It doesn't just show up in your, you know, email box. And usually, if it's spam and email, it's usually wiped out. Believe me, I know, because I'm in the email business. In the end, you know, you use RSS to syndicate your web content. In other words, share it. Sure.
The other blogs that picked up your feed, you had no idea who they were.
I had no idea.
How did they know about you?
Well, I guess being that I'm like linked up to different blogs, and you know, when I put something out, it kind of enters a network.
Yeah.
I think that's how they found it. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I have no idea how they really found me. I just know that I put it out there, and next thing you know, it's been linked on these other blogs, and it started growing, which I think is pretty powerful. And it's happened more than once. And this is stuff, companies from like overseas, companies in the U.S., and it's just like, who are you guys? You know, so it's kind of neat. The question is, so where else can we go with RSS and blogs? Well, that's easy. Podcasting, naturally. Podcasting is actually really simple. It basically, remember that RSS packet that I showed you before? It's just basically throwing in another piece of information, telling that the aggregator, the piece of software, that hey, Mr. Aggregator, I have a link, I have an attachment. And in the case of a podcast, it's an MP3. I mean, theoretically, you can put anything. There's Flashcast now. I think it's called video casting. And, you know, you can put anything you want in there. So it's a pretty powerful medium. So what that means, well, actually, the authority of podcasting is right there, Sean Tubbs of Sevo Podcast. What that really means is sort of all of a sudden, not only are you a journalist, but you can be a disc jockey. You can be a talk show host. You can go out there and record your own shows and push them out to the, you know, and it's corny, but the blogosphere, when it gets spread out and it goes everywhere. And next thing you know, you have audiences that you've never had. You see it a lot with music, obviously. But, you know, I'm starting to notice more corporate blogs. For example, I'm sure they're going to talk about it today, Whirlpool is doing a podcast. UVA, I think, does a podcast. You know, VPTC has done podcasts. So it's a good way to, I think actually this is going to be a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. It's a good way to, like, you know, it expands your audience by, I don't know how many fold, but by a lot. Well, I like to say congratulations, because now you're all rock stars of blogging knowledge. The booklet that we have there, we obviously didn't print enough for everybody, but if you want one, I can actually give you a copy. Just come see me after this. Give me your business card or some way to contact you, and I'll send you a link to actually get the blog, the primer booklet. All right, let's let the real fun begin.
So it was about 9 months ago that I sat out in that room with my first VPTC speaker's lunch, and very quickly became impressed with all of you and wanted to be around you more and join the organization, and then was happy enough to be invited to contribute to events like the Wireless Symposium and help on that, and become part of the Communication Committee and help on that. And it was in the context of doing all that that I got to meet these guys here. So that's my way of saying that VPTC brings the people into your life that need to be there. So go tell your friends and get lots more members. We have some really talented folks here, and these are gentlemen whose work I admire. They're cool to have lunch with. They're cool to talk to, and you know, maybe in the best of all scenarios, you would all like to just hang out for lunch with any one of the three of them and just chat about this stuff.
They're buying lunch.
There you go. Absolutely.
I'll have another one.
Waldo's got an open slot for anybody who wants to do that. We want to have a really interactive conversation here, and Deborah's question prompted me to remind you of sort of the golden invitation, which is, as things occur to you, if you have questions, just stand up and raise your hand. You know, we'll allow for questions and answers at the end, but please don't hesitate to stand up and raise your hand as something occurs to you if you want to interject. We want this to be very free-flowing. So let me give you a little bit of context about our panelists. Sean Tubbs, to my immediate right, Sean Tubbs is an audio producer who's turned RSS feeds and podcasting to find new audiences for his services. He's a veteran of Virginia Public Radio stations and the creative Charlottesville Podcasting Network, a new public affairs website dedicated to providing the community with high-quality audio programming. In 2002, his radio series on Virginia's eugenics movement won a regional Edward R. Murrow Award for Best Documentary. And since starting WordCast Productions earlier this year, his clients have included the University of Virginia, Monticello, and the Virginia Piedmont Technology Council. Sean produced the Wireless Symposium podcast that many of you may have listened to. To Sean's right, Edward Cazette. Edward's director of visual design at Explore Learning, where he also authors the company's blogs. Active in website development community since the heady days of the early 90s. Doesn't seem like that long ago, does it? Edwards was recently listed as one of the web's most creative minds by the prestigious South by Southwest Interactive Conference. His award-winning design work was featured in the 2003 edition of Designing Websites for Everyday Audience, published by How Design Books, and his web blog, Bambino's Curse, Diary of a Red Sox Fan, has garnered praise from Newsweek, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, National Public Radio, and HBO Films. And then, lastly, to Edward's right, we have Waldo Jaquith. Waldo is a 27-year-old from Charlottesville who's been blogging since 1996. And just to put it in context, that's like eons for most of us, right? He's been blogging since 1996 and currently maintains several blogs, including one about Charlottesville, cvillenews.com, and a personal political blog, waldo.jaquith.org. He's a 2005 graduate of Virginia Tech, and he's currently a fellow at the UVA Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership. So please welcome our panelists. So we want to begin the conversation with the big question, why? Why is this important? Why is it in the news? Why should you care? So I want to start with Sean and then go to Waldo and Edward and ask, you know, what are the three reasons why everybody in this room should be paying attention to this topic right now?
Well, I guess with podcasting, and I'll stick with podcasting, even though they're very much related in terms of how they actually work, but in terms of podcasting, it's a great way to produce your own shows for your own businesses. in whichever way you'd like to. Now, if you wanted, for instance, to produce a radio show and get that over the airwaves, that would be very expensive to do. You'd either have to pay for the airtime, you'd have to go through a small number of gatekeepers in the local media. With podcasting, you can just throw that all out the window and you can just simply produce your own show targeted directly to your niche audience. So, for instance, there's a whole lot of different possibilities, which I'm sure we'll discuss about, but some of the programs that I've been working on are real estate podcasts, for instance, a wine podcast, the Wireless Symposium podcast, for instance. These are things that would have cost a lot more money for high-quality programming. The programming, of course, which I shoot for, the same standards that we shoot for in public radio for all sorts of things, but it's really the distribution mechanism, and of course the fact that there are over 28 million iPods out there. There's a potential very large audience, and it's very significant, and it really represents. We're in the very early days of podcasting still. It's still only about a year old or so, but the potential audience is there because as we now switch to video podcasting, I'm sure that you've all seen in the news that ABC is selling their programs through iTunes. We're really beginning to shift as a culture towards an on-demand consumption culture rather than waiting for those gatekeepers to tell us when to listen to those programs, and that's the key.
Sean, do I need an iPod to hear a podcast?
Not at all.
Not at all.
I haven't asked that question before, but just very quickly, it's sort of an odd name, podcasting. I've sort of, and looking at it, kind of a lot more metaphorical these days. Podcasting, you don't need an iPod by any means, even though that was how the term formed. The way I look at the word podcasting now is personal on-demand casting, which really captures that shift. And if you think back to the early days of broadcasting, that's throwing out your seeds to as many people as humanly possible, hoping you're going to get a return of maybe 2%, 3%, whatever it takes to make your business work. And with podcasting, hopefully your margins, you're shooting for larger total audiences, but if you can do it correctly, you can hopefully get much larger return on your investment in terms of producing that and actually reaching the people that you'd like to actually reach.
So the key takeaway there is this is really a new channel to distribute personal content, corporate content, creative content out to lots of different folks. Let's go to Waldo. Why should people be paying attention to this?
You should be paying attention because they're talking about you. They're talking about your business. Every day on cvilleblogs.com, which is it's an aggregator that I run. I do nothing. It's no effort whatsoever. It's this website that I once set up. The people who blog in Charlottesville, their blog entries appear on this website, so any of you at a glance can see what people have been talking about in Charlottesville for the past 24 hours. And what they're talking about, in no small part, is the daily minutia of their lives. Some people make it interesting, some people don't. But it might include, I went to Orbit Billiards last night, and my burger sucked. Well, Drew Vaughn, that owns Orbit, needs to know that somebody thinks that burger sucked. Not because it's just one guy, but because several thousand people just read this one guy say that his burger sucked at Orbit, which, by the way, nobody actually wrote. That was a terrible example. and on the other hand, there's a middle schooler here in town. I can't even remember his name right now, but I mentioned to some people here earlier that I saw him mentioned on his blog this morning that he was at the Charlottesville Almar Airport last night, and he saw that their inspection sticker on, like, the underside of their escalator, God knows how this, like, 12, 13-year-old kid noticed this, expired in, like, 1997. That can't be good for, little does the airport know, for thousands of people to now be reading about. And I'm not sure this kid even knows this blog is on the aggregator. I think he, as far as he knows, his audience is like his classmates. So suddenly, the airport could find themselves in some trouble. Now, there are upsides as well. I work for Virginia Quarterly Review at UVA, the literary publication, and I monitor blogs to see if people are saying good things about VQR. And if they are, I offer some positive reinforcement. I thank them. If they say good things routinely, we give them a free one-year subscription. This makes them say more good things about it. It's a cheap thing, but the feedback loop is great because some of these blogs have thousands of readers. And if they like what they hear about Virginia Quarterly Review, they may end up subscribing too. And as a matter of fact, they do based on what we've seen happen with blogs. So you should be interested in blogs because blogs are interested in you, whether or not you're paying attention.
We have a question?
So how do you control libelous content?
You can't. How do you control libelous content in newspapers? You can't.
Well,
you can't. But you can't control it unless you're in the newspaper business.
Yeah. So hence one of the downsides of blogs, right, is that people could use
Well, sure.
And so that's
like any means of communication, you bet. Yep, that's right.
Edward.
Yeah, just to build on what Waldo said, blogs are a great way to find out what your customers are saying about you. It's also for us at Explore Learning, I search out other teacher blogs to find out how they're using our product. In that sense, it becomes almost like a usability lab. If you see that a teacher in Des Moines, Iowa, is using our gizmos, that's what we call our interactive simulations, in a way that we never expected. Wow, that's something about pre-blog world. We wouldn't have known about that unless we flew out to that school in Des Moines, Iowa, and saw them working on it. So it's real important for that. It's also for us in particular, and this is true probably for in any of your industry, it's to keep up with what's going on in the industry by reading the blogs of the people in the industry. For instance, I read what Macromedia is doing. Our product uses the Macromedia plugin, so all of our developers read what the Macromedia developers are blogging about. And they're specific. And if they write, for instance, we've got this new product that we can't tell you too much about, but it's going to do X, Y, and Z, we need to make sure we're prepared to take advantage of X, Y, and Z ahead of time. This happened. Like a good example of this is when Macromedia a few years back was really pushing accessibility within their product. That immediately fired us up to get all those hooks together to tie in so that then when they release their accessible product, we can say, we're accessible. And we fit right in. So we're ahead of that because of reading blogs. So it's big for that reason. And another thing, too, that we haven't mentioned so far about blogs is they don't always have to be public. We have five or six blogs that are totally behind the scene as part of our intranet, if you will, where we use them to communicate with other employees. Our sales staff is all over the country, so we have a sales blog. And you can find out what's Bill in Texas doing. Oh, that's what he's doing. You can comment on it. This is all internal for the company. It's much more efficient than email. In that regard, and it's because of the permalinks that we mentioned earlier, if I want to 6 months from now, I want to refer to something that Bob said about sales in Texas, I can just link to that. Boom, you know. So there's a couple of reasons right there.
So Bah Humblog, right? There, we touched on this a little bit, and my question to the group here, and we can just touch on this really briefly. Blogs seem to be getting a lot of bad press recently, right? How many of you read Forbes?
Oh, jeez.
So how many of you saw the Attack of the Blogs cover story, right? Did anybody actually read it? So this is terrifying stuff. If you read this, you would say, well, not only am I not going to go to that luncheon, but I'm going to stay away from blogs entirely, right? In a similar vein, the Post ran a piece a couple weeks ago called Blogs Being the new Space for Spam. And they actually talk about splogs, right? That blogs aren't valuable. That's just a bunch of sploggings, right? So my question to the group is, what's the creative and constructive response to this? I mean, do people take that at face value? Or is there something behind the scenes that these aren't really giving a full flavor of in terms of what's going on with the blog sphere? Edward, why don't we start with you?
I definitely think there's some truth to that, but the blogs that get the most hype tend to be the ones that are the politically oriented ones, which I think is sort of one step removed from like what I'm specifically talking about with business blogging. It's more the small end of the tail, if you will. So it doesn't apply in our case. I mean, I think you're always going to have those kinds of attack blogs, that's just the nature of any sort of medium. And you know, blogs follow along in that path.
Waldo?
I don't think that blogs are getting a lot of bad press. I think the amount of bad press, the Forbes story, speaking of slander, that's the other way around. The Forbes story was just completely ridiculously over the top. I don't know what is wrong with the author of that, but it was pretty crazy. I think any bad press is far outweighed by good press. But on the whole, blogs are a communications medium like any other one, and people will say stupid things, and people will say slanderous things, and people will say smart things. But on the whole, I think it's foolish to blame the medium on this. And I think that's the mistake that Forbes made with their article, is they blame the medium. But no, I think the press is quite good. I don't have any complaints.
John?
Well, for podcasting, it's not quite the same thing, but I would say that I think that, again, there's this whole shift going on, and just to address his question, at the same time, because I think that they are related. And I think we have a slide coming up in a second about this, so I won't touch on it too much. But I think that all you can do creatively is just to produce the best possible thing that you can. So you do your research, you do fact check it. Because if you get something wrong, you're going to get corrected, which I believe that's happened on your side.
All the time. I screw up constantly.
Yeah.
It's true.
And it's a constantly evolving thing. Because these can change so fast and they're referenced and they're indexed, there's a lot of accountability built into the structure, and that if you say something stupid, you're going to look stupid. And as for me, posting audio content, if I post bad audio content, it's the same thing. I mean, I'm different because I'm taking the same standards that I'm taking from one medium into another, mm-hmm. Which might be a little different from a lot of other podcasters and bloggers. But I just think it's – I think the press has actually been fairly good. I haven't read that article. I probably won't because I don't need to. Okay.
So let's talk about the gentleman's question in the back there. What makes for a good blog with all the things that are out there? And I think the phrase you used was, you know, the tidal wave of information that's coming at us. How do we build content into our blogs, our podcasts, our material that we're syndicating to make sure that it's relevant and noteworthy and stands out?
Actually, I wouldn't mind starting. I've seen some business-oriented blogs. That is, if y'all were to want to start blogging for your businesses, that are really bad. There are, and Jim will appreciate this, there are two real estate blogs in town, one of which nobody's ever heard of. And it's because, A, it's not very good, it's not very well written, but B, the what is written about is this real estate agent's business in a very strict sense. I don't know this real estate agent. I don't find it interesting to read about the houses that she's selling or not selling. Then we have Jim Duncan's blog, who maintains one of the most interesting, I think it's fair to say, the most interesting business blog in town, where he touches on politics, he touches on planning, he touches on government, he touches on social aspects to tie them all together back to real estate. I read his blog. I read every blog entry that Jim Duncan's ever written on his blog. And I feel like, I'm sorry? I don't know.
It's called Real Crozet, Virginia.
Well, that's one of them. That's one of them.
That's the Crozet one. The one that RealCentralPA.com.
And you can go to SteveBillBlogs.com. You can pretty much get to all of them.
Yeah.
That's the hub for all the Charlottesville blogs.
But I feel like I know what's going on in Charlottesville real estate, and not because Jim tells me, values are dropping by 5%. Trust me. He says, I don't know if you've actually written this, so bear with me, values have dropped 5%, and here's the evidence, I'll link to it, and here's why, is you've seen this change in mortgage rates, and you've seen a bit of a bubble going on, and maybe that seems to be going down a little. So I'm not being spoon-fed information, I'm being brought into a conversation, and I find it really helpful. And I think one of the most important things about a good business blog, not a blog in the whole, but a good business blog, is don't make it a bunch of press releases because nobody cares and nobody's going to read it. I might not even list it on SevoBlogs.com if it was too boring. I'm yet to not list anything, but if we get enough, well, if not blogs, I don't know what you'd call them, press release blogs, PR blogs, nobody cares. And don't waste your time on that. A good blog involves good writing and a good conversation with your readers.
And I think I'd like to just step in there for a second. I would disagree with Waldo on that because I do think that there would be a market for some of those press release blogs for certain audiences. I think that the key here is niche audiences. There's maybe, let's say, 1,000 people in this country who are interested in the particular minutiae of an obscure 1970s television show. Well, there's probably a blog for that. And if not, maybe one of those people would create that. Now, that could be perceived as a tidal wave, but because these are indexed and because hopefully using Google, I mean, the spiders are already out there and everything I post is on Google pretty fairly quickly, I think that people are going to be able to get to whatever they want. And I think that, again, as you have a generation of people who come up expecting to find whatever they want in a digital universe where everything is online, and I think that I don't know if we'll get into it, but the whole concept of the long tail, the idea that there's a lot of profit in things that only these niche audiences are interested in. I think the same kind of logic appeals to some of these blogs, that there would be a market for each blog. Now, of course, I do agree with the idea of the conversation. To be successful and to attract the most eyeballs using using the traditional model of how we measure these types of things, yeah, Waldo's going to get a lot more hits than that than the show about the far-out space nuts. But the interesting thing about the far-out space nuts and these types of things, as that television, actually, and this is actually true if you remember that show, AOL.
A real show?
Hmm?
Yeah, you're making that up. The Far Out Space Nuts.
The Far Out Space Nuts. It was Sid and Marty Krofft, and this is germane because it's going to be online. All of those shows, AOL they announced last week they're putting all of those shows along with a whole bunch of other shows online where anybody can watch them for free. In a blogosphere, people are going to build up some audience because anybody can choose to take their leisure time and watch that And it's just all going to be interconnected. And so I think that it will shape itself out. And it's important to not measure this enormous potential universe by the measuring mechanisms of the old ones.
I'd like to point out, too, that there are so many different types of blogs, and they're not all the same. For instance, our corporate blog for Explore Learning, I really wouldn't expect you to come there for entertainment or for snarky writing or to find out what's going on. You're coming there to find out, are there any bugs today? Is the site working today? What products are they working on? Why should I be excited in this company? Who's doing what at that company? You know, are they out speaking? Are they out meeting teachers in schools? What issues are they dealing with, and how are they dealing with them? So that's a much smaller, narrower focus of the blog. And you're going to come to our blog or to a different business blog for that reason. That's going to be a different reason than I would go to, say, some sports blogs where I want to find out about sabermetrics or something like that. I think you see what I'm saying. It's a different type of thing.
Great.
Is anybody out there? So this question came up before, right? Deborah, I think, asked this of Waldo. How do we know that people are? How do you know that? Or Michael, I'm sorry, you asked it of Michael. How did you know that people were reading your blog? So once you get your content out there and you've got people connecting and subscribing, what's a good practice for keeping in touch with how people are beginning to share that information about your blog with other folks? And more importantly, what can you do to begin to grow your own community? Sean, you want to start?
Sure. The first measure of success I had was actually because of blogs. An early thing I'd produced as an experiment, a half an hour show on that followed that a public hearing at that was going on for the Federal, I can't remember the exact acronym, but it was about the idea of whether or not to add two more reactors at North Anna. Well, I produced a half an hour piece on that, which got posted, and it was fairly objective. I mean, it was talking to both sides, and it was, I thought, a pretty good piece. It had over 200 downloads because somebody posted it to a blog. What I'd like to do is to cultivate from the ground up rather than from a top-down mechanism by making sure that people know about the content that I'm posting. So, for instance, I just produced a it's a little different for me because I have partnerships with other media organizations, so I'm looking to increase my total audience rather than to just increase the podcasting audience. So it's a little different for me, but I think it is this – but I think that I posted on my blog a couple of days ago a review of this podcast I listened to. I got an email from the host of the show thanking me for posting that. I mean, it's a different world. You're not going to get that from Aaron Brown of CNN, for instance, but you're going to get it from podcasters. It's much more organic, and I think a lot of the people that I know in this room I've met through the blogosphere, including Jim in the back, who is working on a video on an enhanced audio podcast of one of his listings at the moment. So hopefully there's an audience for that too.
Waldo?
Just on the whole, to know if anybody's reading your blog is the same, know if anybody's looking at your website. There are some standard tools that allow you to see historical trends of traffic on your website, with the additional benefit that blog software shows you who is linking to your blog and to specific blog entries and how many comments that you're getting. And those are the only two new metrics by which you'd want to measure, you know, how do you know if people are reading your blog. But on the whole, it's the traditional site metric software that if any of y'all have a website, you probably already have this stuff installed. It still applies here.
Yeah, and the only thing I would add is that the linking to other people is the fastest way to grow that all this stuff that we're all talking about. Because you know the other person sees that in their software, and then they might mention it, blah blah blah, and it just keeps building. So we try on our corporate blog whenever we see, for instance, we're in the education field, so whenever we see teachers with blogs, we always try to highlight those and build up that conversation.
So in our conversation so far, we've talked about some examples. I know Michael mentioned Whirlpool doing a podcasting. You can actually go there, and they have, I think they call it the American Family Values podcast, and it's really about everyday life. It's not about washers and dryers and washing machines. It's about different things that people are doing on a lifestyle content area. So there's examples like that of corporate blogs. But let's talk about what some of your favorite shows are right now, and maybe give us examples of good things to go listen to so that we can get an idea of how to produce content.
Sean's the man.
Well, I guess I would say at this moment there's no exact number, but there are 15,000 podcasts at the moment. A lot of that number probably is made up of radio shows. A lot of radio shows that you like. Not all of NPR stuff is out there, but some of the stuff that I'm listening to there's a couple of really good radio programs that we don't get here because they're only on in major markets. But of course, now those programs can be broadcast nationally. One of them is a show called The Sound of Young America, which is a show about comedy. The guy, he's a 22-year-old host who somehow cons his way into getting great interviews with all kinds of people in comedy. And again, that's the example of something that's not necessarily going to make it to the national airwaves, but it's a show that I'm personally interested in, being very interested in this sort of thing. Some other good ones locally, there is an organization in town called Charlottesville Tomorrow, which is producing, in conjunction with the Charlottesville Podcast Network, we just produced a lot of the candidates debates for the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors races. But that's not exactly the most interesting thing to listen to. I would say at this point, there's some really good stuff out there. I listen to a lot of BBC stuff. There's a lot of there's some great material out there. That's, again, it's the ease of getting it. And I don't know if this is a good place to insert this, but I think that the latest statistics I've heard is that something like 5 million Americans have downloaded a podcast. So there's something out there, and I think iTunes has registered since they went live with podcasting support. There's been something like over 7 million downloaded, and so it's increasing, and there's something out there for everybody. And I know what I like. So
there is something out there for everybody. And for those of you who are familiar with Apple iTunes has the ability to go and search for podcasts, so you can look for topics and categories and genres. There's also a website called odeo.com. And Odeo is sort of a podcasting aggregator. Again, you can go and search for content and topics and genres. There's all sorts. To Sean's point, if you can imagine it, there's probably a blog or podcast on it. So this is a good way to find additional content that's in your sector, in your specialty. If you're in marketing and communications, go look at other marketing and communications blogs. If you're in services and software, go look at those. Real estate, do the same. There's plenty of other examples out there. I just want to pause for a quick time check. Are we too?
Yes,
we okay? Okay. Michael's going to take us to Odeo. If we can get this.
And as it's going to Odeo, too, I should point out that Odeo was formed by the guy who sold Blogger, who started and formed Blogger.com, sold it to Google, I believe, and used the funds to start this, which is a podcast. It's another way to get them. It's sort of becoming standard. It will become standardized how you subscribe to these things at some point, but there's still a bit of growing pains.
And the thing about, Deborah asked a question before about, do you need an iPod to listen to a podcast? And as Sean said, the answer is no. I mean, in my own sort of work routine, I get podcasts going and I just have them in the background as if I'm listening to the radio or television. And then if you're traveling, you can put them on your iPod and go somewhere. But it's a great way. BBC has lots of podcasts. There's tech podcasts. There's great content. Just use it as yet another channel, the way you would maybe turn on the television or radio for news, for information, et cetera. So this is Odeo. We won't spend a lot of time looking at it, but you can just get a sense that they float to the top. Some of their more featured content areas and feature channels. The use of this is rather simple. You see some subscribe buttons there. If you find something that's of interest to you, hit the subscribe button. It'll add you to that feed, and then from that point forward, you'll begin to get it in your aggregator.
And one thing I want to point out about podcasts too, if you think that your particular industry or whatever is too maybe isn't that cutting edge, or your customer base isn't, I just want to point out one of the most popular podcasts, and it's one that I particularly enjoy. It's called The Catholic Insider, and it's produced by the Vatican of all places. So, I mean, they're in a business of sorts to get more customers, and it's really interesting. it's a really entertaining podcast too, and it shows you how far you can stretch it. Because if you're imagining, okay, what would the Catholic Insider talk about? Well, it's all sorts of other stuff that has nothing to do with directly with the church. It's just The Father Roderick walking around and describing the city he's in, or describing a cathedral, describing a work of art. It's just, again, it doesn't. It works. I'm a lapsed Catholic, but I've been listening to the Catholic Insider daily.
They must surely ask themselves regularly. What the Jesus blog?
Noel has a question.
There have been several highly visible firings due to employee bloggers. And I'd ask the panel and any communications officers who happen to be in here, what advice would you have for developing a clear communications policy for your employees who might want to turn into bloggers?
I know nothing.
That's a great question.
I do know that IBM has addressed this issue, and they've addressed it by basically setting up guidelines. So there are clear guidelines that they've set up. I can't refer to them exactly. The other, basically saying don't give away company information. You can be held liable for that sort of thing. But I think it sort of, again, represents a shift in terms of you can't stop people from saying what they want, but I think you can clearly put guidelines out there that says if you do these, you run afoul of us. And I think that's fair. And I think, I think that the firings you talk about, I believe one of them was related to Google, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that that was a case where somebody got the job and was giving out corporate secrets over his blog.
There was also a big one, the young lady I believe was with Vogue, and she wasn't giving away corporate secrets or really even talking about the company, but she was bad-mouthing a lot of her coworkers
on the site. Yeah. Well, I think you should see as an extension of speech. I mean, you wouldn't say those things to people. I mean, I think it goes back to the libel issue as well. You have to self-regulate your conduct to be a member of society, I think we're going to see a lot more of that as people blog. There are also some safety issues as well too. Don't give away too much information about yourself, because I think the case of the VCU student who was murdered, for instance, that's a definite thing. You know, I think that there has to be a certain education for how do we communicate and in a safe, responsible way. And I think that you'll see a lot more standards like that. IBM, by the way, was actually, I'm adapting that because they were actually putting forth podcasting standards. They're actively encouraging a conversation among IBM employees about, you know, essentially expanding the water cooler, so to speak.
There's actually two aspects to it. There's the corporate blog or blogging for the corporation, and then there's your own personal blog as an employee, totally separate from the corporation, right? Both those issues. For the corporate blog, if you're blogging as a company representative, I think you have to have guidelines, and they should be clearly defined for the employees. You know, what's appropriate to blog about, what isn't. We actually clear everything until everyone in our company blogs. They're all members of our blog. Until you're sort of been cleared, you can't post directly. All your stuff goes into a draft, and then I look it over. If it passes my thing, I put it up. If I'm unsure, I kick it up the chain to say, is this bordering onto proprietary information, or is this something that isn't going to look right? So you do have to take those considerations. And as for the employee blogging on their own, yeah, that's a whole other issue. I personally, for myself, I use pseudonyms on my own blog just so there is no connection, because I don't want someone to Google my name and know that I work for Explore Learning and see stuff that I've written under that name. So I'm trying to create a firewall between that.
Advertising Age, a couple of weeks ago, released a survey, and this point is going to lose a little bit of its impact because I don't actually have the numbers with me. I thought they brought them, but they did a survey of the amount of time that people spend at their workplace doing blogs. And over the past couple of weeks, we were chatting amongst ourselves about, you know, is that a good thing, is that a bad thing, and it goes to the point of creating some distinction and some ground rules around blogging in your corporate responsibility and personal blogs and how you differentiate between the two. And Edward, you had an example where folks could use or sort of use their personal time for blogging to kind of further or be a part of a corporate effort. I think you used the Dunkin' Donuts example, right?
Sort of. It's more a case like with my company again. It depends on what type of blogging you're doing or what type of blogs you're reading while you're on the clock. Doing stuff where you're researching what Macromedia is saying about such and such, or finding out what teachers are doing, is one thing. Looking at I don't know, ESPN, for instance. You know, it's not that's a slippery slope if you're not involved in that industry.
I did have a question. As communicators, I mean, I think the merits of whether it's good or bad or whatever, blogs are out there for sure. And if we look at them as an extension of getting our word out, what's the best way to get messages out to you all as blog masters?
Just bloggers.
Bloggers. Do you react to press releases? Do you just pick it up as you see it? Do you just want to hear a conversation that bubbles up to the top? Do you want to just kind of observe the environment as you see it, and that's what's newsworthy to you? But how do you kind of look at content or receive content or get excited about things that you think should be part of your blog?
I guess I'll start this off just since I run CivilNews.com as I have since 2001, which is just basically a local blog of what's going on in town. I do the bulk of the writing, but I've recently started getting more and more people. I've got two more people and invite a couple other people to join and make it more of a group blog, so it's just not what I think. But the trouble is how I pick up what to read about. It's whatever I think looks shiny at the moment. Oh, look, something's shiny, and I look at that, and I want to blog about that. There's no process. Anybody can post a comment to CivilNews.com.
Oh, they can't post a committed story?
They can't, nope. People can submit things, and I'll write. Deborah writes, and then I'll put the whole thing. Oh, there it is. Hold it down. there you go. I think the first. Oh, geez, that's up top. That's kind of embarrassing, isn't it? We're just sort of. And once this is podcast, the whole universe will collapse on itself, won't it? So I think like the first two stories here are by me, and then I think the third one is by Dwayne Graham, one of the contributors to the site here. Yeah. So it's whatever we find interesting. And I tell you, I don't really enjoy reading press releases. But I have my hobby horses. People who read the site know that I'm really interested in development. I'm really interested in sprawl. I'm really interested in examples of innovative government. So like when y'all put the green roof, that was totally cool that Albemarle County put the green. And I wrote about that. I thought it was really interesting. If you issued a press release about, adjusting some budget numbers by 2% to achieve some new goal, yeah, I don't care. But on the other hand, what Sean does for Charlottesville Podcast, he's interested in providing some of the minutiae, like we saw with podcast with the school board meeting that Brian Wheeler just put up. There aren't a whole lot of people that want to listen to a podcast of school board meetings, but to a small percentage of people, that's really cool. That's some real interesting stuff. So it really varies depending on the blogger as well. You have to know, if you want to get mentioned on blogs, you want to be a topic of blog discussion, you got to know what those blogs are. You need to know the personalities that run them. And if you want to get me to write about something, you got to know what my hobby horses are. And you email me and say, no, this really ties into development, and here's why. Well, yeah, cool, y'all write about that. Because we're all just a bunch of egotists when you get down to it. So
basically, you're telling someone like me to pitch you as a
newsworthy
person, and member of the media, just like anyone else she'd pitch with her news.
Now, there's a weird division among bloggers. Some bloggers hate the idea that they would ever be treated as media. Drives them nuts. I am a media fanboy. I would love to be a journalist, except there's no money in it. Like there's money in blogging. That's funny. yeah. It's the free lunches that does it. Yeah, it's David Hendricks discovering. It involves a pitch, or let's say you decided to maintain an Albemarle County blog. I guarantee you I would read that. And if I saw something shiny there, I'd probably jump for it. But every time Sean Tubbs emails me and says, Waldo, listen, I know you read my site every day, but I just put this podcast up, and in case you don't listen to it, it's really interesting. I think you should mention it on CivilNews.com. I will. Not always, but almost always. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. One of the things we talked about sort of in relation to that when we were chatting the other day was the notion of authenticity, right? As with many emerging technologies, podcasts and blogs can easily be sort of co-opted, and it's very easy to stumble across some that lack that level of authenticity where it's an interesting person writing about things that are of interest to them and to the people that they connect with. So in terms of what bloggers look for, in terms of what to comment on or what to respond to, there's usually a pretty good radar, I think, and tell me if you guys feel differently, usually a pretty good radar in terms of, well, this is for real, this is legitimate, this is a genuine person writing with some amount of authenticity versus this is, you know, someone posing to be a real person as a blog, but they're actually just a mouthpiece for this particular cause or that particular corporation.
We saw a lot of that during the elections last week, the campaigns leading up to those. There were some campaigns, many campaigns maintained blogs. Most of them were terrible. Because it was just an official campaign mouthpiece. It was often just regurgitated press releases. So there were some that were very good. And what was very good about them, I'm thinking of Bruce Rommel, the Democrat who ran for House of Delegates against incumbent Bob Marshall up in the 13th District. Bruce's campaign staff maintained a blog. And I felt like I was an integral part of that campaign. I don't think I did anything useful for him after the day he decided to run for office. But I was able to keep up with the events that they went to. I could see the pictures of the teas that were hosted on his behalf. I was privy to information that wasn't secret, but they didn't have to let me know about. But they did. They put it in the blog for the world to read. And it helped me feel like I was engaged in that campaign. And if I'd had a penny, I would have given it to him. But I didn't. But hopefully other people did. Then we had, right here in town, many of you all probably know Tom McChrystal, who ran for House of Delegates against David Toscano. Tom had the best, hands down, the best candidate blog in the state. Because it was completely authentic. When he wrote on that, I know Tom. I know that's his voice. I know he's writing it. And every post told me something about him and his campaign. Authenticity went a long way with blogs this election season.
So. Yeah. Just like to add into that another twist on the authenticity. We actually we put out our blog specifically for the authenticity question. For instance, we sell educational software. Most teachers view people who make educational software as not one of them and not having been in the trenches. We all have been. We're all former teachers. We all love education. So the blog is our chance to say, hey, we're not these greedy corporate guys who want to dupe your administration into buying millions of dollars worth of software that you're never going to use. We really believe in this software. We developed this software because we were teaching and we wanted it, and this is what we developed. And now we're trying to pass it on to you. So that authenticity through the blog is a huge it's part of our marketing, frankly.
There was a question in the midroom.
Yes, with the business blog specifically, obviously you can. You shouldn't control what other bloggers say about your business other than to deliver a good product. But with your own blog on your business website, how do you decide if you should enable comments and track backs and stuff? Because I think it seems to me there's some concern. If you put up a blog with no comments, it makes it look like, you know, that's a measure of traffic to people visiting your site. And so they may see you as a non-player in your business because people aren't. You know, so if you are going to enable comments, how do you get people? Or do you just decide not to comment on your business blog? And if you do enable them to comment, how, if any, moderation should you do if, you know, one of your competitors, say, comes and posts on your blog and makes out something about how your product sucks?
Perfect. Good position to answer that, huh?
That's a good question. On our blog, we have very few comments, and I don't let that bother me. It's mostly because I think in the education world, it's not. We're a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of blogging, so I don't expect a lot of teachers to be. Teachers are just now starting to turn on to the notion of blogging and starting their own blogs. So I just don't think the comments are something that's going to happen. On the other hand, I like to have it there just in case it does. You know, it's like it may happen someday. And the fact that we don't have comments on hardly any of our posts doesn't bother me at all. When we do get bad comments, they're usually spam bot comments, and that's a real problem with us for us. A lot of porn-type comments go up there. Not a lot, but it happens every now and then. We use a separate service called TypePad to run our blog off for various reasons I won't go into here, but you can ask me about why I do that later if you need to. They do a very good job of weeding out the spam comments. But last week, for instance, they had a breakdown in their servers, and not only was the firewall down so that the porn spam bots could spam, their service was down and I couldn't delete them. So we went through a six-hour period where we had some forbiddenlove.com and daddyincest.com stuff up on our corporate blog, and it was a real scary situation, and we've since had some words with TypePad about it. So that's a real issue. If that were to happen again, we would probably have to pull comments forever. You know, the corporate hammer would come down. It is a scary thing. Generally, it's not a problem, but it's something to be very aware of.
That question actually tees right into what we had as sort of our last framing question, which was the notion of controlling content. So in this case, the question is how do you control content regarding to comments? But one of the things I want to do to kind of take that to one step further is we're sitting here, we're thinking about putting together blogs for our content. We're going to put together our something that's going to be beneficial to our businesses and our customers. What mindset should we have with regard to creating that content? I mean, typically we're of the mindset of, you know, we write, we produce, we edit, we vet, then we either put it in the direct mail piece or we put it in the print piece, or we publish it to the web. We're talking about something entirely different here. So what are the types of things we need to be thinking about with regard to content control, not only with regard to comments, but also just in general, putting stuff up there and letting it find its way and filter out through the blog sphere?
Let it go. It can be really frightening to see what you've written appear on other blogs. There is, for example, a unfortunately popular blog in the country, a white power blog, that is really upset with me because I insulted Nazis, how dare I, on civilnews.com. And so I've seen some of my writing appear on their site, in which they're trying to throw back at me that how can you be an advocate of free speech and yet this same guy, this Waldo character, won't let us say how important we think it is that Jews should die. Well, I guess I'm a hypocrite. What can I say? They get to use my writing. There's not a whole lot I can do about it. I've seen authors put up portions of short stories on their blog. And they get really upset when other bloggers, might even in an approving fashion, reproduce that excerpt and say, isn't this great? For more, you should see more from this author. And they say, no, wait a minute, that's my copyrighted work. I put a page of that up on my blog and you can't take it. You got to accept that with a blog, it's a high honor for people to take what you've written and reproduce it elsewhere. Sometimes it's less honorable than others. But on the whole, it's the currency. When you write something, and somebody reproduces it, they've just paid you an honor. But they might change it. They might intersperse their own quotes. They might get it wrong. Best you can do is say, don't do that, or let me offer a correction. But it's a scary thing compared to putting a brochure out there. It'll change.
I think I saw there was a hand in the middle of the room.
The example earlier about the 70s television show. I was one of the 1,000 people that ever worshipped the ground that Sid and Marty Krofft walked on. And I wanted to write this.
I can know who they are.
About how great they are.
I have been lost.
This is not the field of dreams. I mean, if I write it, there's no guarantee that people will come. So how is it that, A, people find that I'm writing this adoring blog about Sid and Marty Krofft, and B, how do I let the 1,000 other people who love Sid and Marty Krofft know that I've got this blog out there that they might find interesting? Mm-hmm.
Well, one way, of course, is tagging. I don't think we really touched upon tagging. I don't understand tagging to the extent that these two do. But the idea of you would basically, on Technorati, you can add a tag that identifies that posting as having a certain keyword. And this is something that anybody can do. So if one person goes to it and says, I'd like to, you know, and says, would you like to add a tag? You know, they might add a tag that connects it to that particular piece of information. Also, too, I believe, and I'm a little bit skeptical on this, but if somebody takes and quotes a permalink on their blog, it automatically tracks back in the comments field. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, that's what Waldo does, for instance, and it tracks back to my blog entry. So there's a connection. You know, there's a link of permalinks, so to speak. And once you have those links, I believe that's how Google, and again, correct me here, but I believe that's how Google begins to measure and index things, is these interconnections. So essentially, you just write them an email and say, hey, I just posted this review of why I think Bob Denver's best role was... Sorry, I keep going back to... I really hate that show. It's really bad. but you could think of that in terms of anything, and you can terms that in terms of any business. One of the podcasts that I'm trying to produce, and it's currently on hiatus while I sort out some other projects, is a podcast about Virginia wine, for instance. Well, it's in my interest as the person producing the show to make sure everybody knows about that this is being produced. And it has to be a patient thing at this point because this is not universally adopted technology. I don't know what the statistics are in terms of how many people know the percentage. What is it, like 10% of people know what RSS means? So there's a bit of room to grow, but I think we're still in the very early days. Well, maybe not the early days of blogging, but in terms of podcasting, yes. But again, they're very interrelated.
You would also want to go to any existing fan communities that exist for this mysterious 70s show, whether it be mailing lists or websites or existing blogs, or you could just find a great blog about 70s TV shows. Every time you post a comment on a blog, for most blogs, they'll ask for three things: the contents of your comment, or I guess four things, your comment, your name, your email address, and your website address. So if you wanted to promote this new specific 70s TV show blog, become a member of these 70s TV show other blogs, and when you post a comment, make sure you put in the address for your blog. And every time you do that, there's going to be a link next to your comment to visit your website to read about the specific TV show. And it's in good old-fashioned, just promotion, telling people, emailing people, and posting lots of comments to related blogs.
So I think we're pretty much coming to close. We have maybe one more quick question. Quick question, Deborah.
My question is, do you have to hire a web designer now to make a blog for you?
So I'll field that one real quick. The answer is yes and no. You can go to places like TypePad. You can go to places like WordPress. You can go to places like Blogger. Start your own. Do your own blog. Have at it. Be happy. You can also, if you choose to get something that's a little bit more look and feel with your consistent corporate website, hire a web designer like Deborah.
Handcrafted high tech.
Or others in the room to take the look and feel of your current site and mold it to the website software that's being used by the blog host. So for corporate look and feels, you probably want a designer. You can also do your own and just go right to the hosted website. Let me get to Tracy real quick, and then we're going to close.
Let's say BBC wanted to do an RSS news feed. What does that really look like? Would we need to have somebody who moderates the RSS feed, or could they then members, for example, they have their news that they want to send out, would then funnel it to, and what does that look like? How do you technically do that?
Your website right now, and Deborah, please correct me if I'm wrong, when you add in a news story, that's a database entry, isn't it? Oh, sorry, never mind. Okay, well, normally is really a rude word to use. Often, for websites, for corporate websites, each news article is just a new entry in a database. And so to generate that front page, it just asks the database for the latest news. RSS is just another little page that queries the same news and just puts it in a slightly different format. So all I would see is somebody visiting the VPTC website is a little button that says RSS. And when I click on it, it gets added to my news reader. It's nothing more than the exact news you already put up on your website, only it gets delivered right to my news reader.
But what if I wanted it to be members' news, and that might need to be filtered, for example, for quality?
You mean members could submit news and you would publish it? Presumably, you would want people to email news to you, so y'all would decide what you wanted to put on there. And then once you added it, anybody with the RSS feed would find that it would appear. I'm trying to think of the simplest way to describe it, but suffice it to say, it uses the same news data you already use, only in a, you saw that code up there, it only presents it in a slightly different format. It's very simple. There's no magic involved. I've created RSS feeds for the Daily Progress, for WINA, for the Cavalier Daily, for these media outlets that I want to read in my newsreader, but I can't because they won't get off their duffs and put up an RSS feed years after everybody else has had one. So I wrote one, and I don't even have anything to do with their website. I did it from afar because it's just so trivial. I think it maybe took me 50 lines of code. If I'd been able to get access to their server, I could have done it in 10. It's really easy.
So contact information for Waldo and Edward and Sean is either in the primer or on the VTPC website. Sorry. Mine is there as well. Feel free to ask any follow-up questions. We're happy to continue the conversation in the blog sphere. Thank you very much, gentlemen.